My name is Paul Bowe, and we are discussing under the theme of aging and changing various factors that have to do with the process of growing older in American society. Yesterday we talked quite a bit about how older people relate to rapid change, and we talked about the fact that technologically and value-wise and transportation-wise and so on, tremendous rapid changes are taking place in this country. And yet most of us have come out of traditional kind of value systems and traditional habits and so on. And it sometimes is very difficult to deal with a changing world and to find a proper role for ourselves in the midst of a changing world. Well, I thought today we'd try to talk a little bit about how many of us there are getting to be. In our society, there are getting to be a lot more of us. By us, I mean older people, particularly over 65 and maybe over 70. But I'm sure you're all aware, as I am, and certainly the statisticians are aware of it, there are a lot more older people in our population. Many more people reaching the age of 70. Now, this is an interesting statistic because it doesn't necessarily mean that there are a lot more people reaching the age of 90 and 100, because there's something. Well, there are more, of course, because there are more of us. But proportionately speaking, as I've talked to some of the demographers and those who deal with statistics of our population, that there seems to be a kind of a cutoff point. And only a few people live beyond the 90s. Only a few people. There must be some genetic factor that limits. And I read the other day that about the outer limit in this country is 110 years. And it just seems that almost nobody, they haven't been able to prove, really, that anybody lived much more than 110 years. Now, there are some who have claimed that, but they haven't been able to prove it. They say that people live longer than that in Russia and in some countries in South America, but there again, they can't prove it because the certificates and so on are not there to prove it. So apparently there gets to be in the 90s a kind of a cutoff point where only a few people endure beyond that. But that age group between 65 and 90 is growing rapidly. And this has a lot of implications. Well, I suppose And again, as I said yesterday, you know most of this already. I'm bringing it up so that we can use it as a springboard for talking about how this relates to us as older people. First of all, I think we're getting more and more of us who are getting older because of medical advances. Most of you are old enough, as I am, to remember when pneumonia took all kind of... People dreaded to go to the hospital because one of the consequences of being in the hospital often was pneumonia. They didn't have any way of stopping it. And many, many people, I remember my uncle was a medical doctor in Crookston, Minnesota. And he died at the age of 41 of pneumonia. They had him in the hospital. He was a medical doctor, had the best care, couldn't pull him through. Now people get pneumonia and penicillin and so on just, you know, cure it up in a few days. So pneumonia doesn't take people anymore. TB, I remember when I was a young pastor, I used to go to the two TB sanitariums and visit the tubercular patients who were members of my congregation. And who hears much about TB anymore? That's practically gone. And the dreaded diseases like typhoid fever and things like that are pretty much a thing of the past because of modern medical advances. Currently, the big killers are cancer and heart disease and things like that. But tremendous inroads are being made even in those fields. Surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, early detection and so on, campaigns against smoking and all that kind of thing, are reducing the incidence of death from cancer, or are prolonging the life of many people who have become victims of cancer. And doctors are even quietly talking about the possibility of really conquering cancer. They're not promising anything, but it's coming. Asthma, I've got asthma. Didn't develop it till I was in my 60s. But it really bothered me. I wheezed and it was hard to breathe and so on. They can't cure it, but I've got great medications. I just went up just before this session and used a couple of inhalers and I feel great. I can hike up the mountain and all that kind of stuff. So asthma doesn't really, doesn't bother me as long as I take my medications. So asthma used to take a lot of people, but now you can handle it. Then these new techniques of heart transplants, kidney transplants, all of those things, surgical techniques are prolonging our lives. A lot of people are living longer, and I think partly at you and I, but think of what's going to be in the next generation because of better health care among young people. A lot more young people are living longer and more healthily now. A lot fewer infants are dying. More people are going to move to maturity because of health habits. School lunch programs, school physical exams, much better nutrition. Lifestyles are better and different. Maybe you don't agree with all these lifestyles, but certainly diet. Look at the attention being paid to diet nowadays. Tremendous, goodness. If you watch television, you've got diet ads all over the place. Doctors are writing diet books and so on. I suppose it's good. I'm sure it is. But exercise. Joggers all over the place. People doing regular exercises, going to health clubs, etc. Leisure time. We've got more leisure time. We can relax more. The tensions aren't as heavy. Some of us, at least. So all of this comes together. Lifestyle, medical advances, etc. come together to enable more and more people to live. Now, the projections are that the proportion of older people in society will continue to advance into the year 2000. Now, I can't project much beyond that because certain factors come into society. You remember the baby boom, the post-war baby boom, where that whole generation just blossomed out and it was tremendous. Those people are getting to be middle-aged and older people now. But there may be another baby boom for some reason or other, so that the proportion will change again. But the outlook for the next few years, the next generation of 20 to 25 years, the outlook is that the proportion of us, you and me and people like us all around the country, is going to grow in relationship to the proportion of younger people. Now that has got a lot of implications. That's got a lot of implications. Not just for the younger people. It raises some real tough questions for you and for me as to what our responsibilities are in looking at that kind of a situation. All right, I've got a lot of notes here that I could lecture on about what this means. I'd rather open it up at this point and raise a question with you about, do we have any responsibility in this situation? Does this raise any questions for you and me? The fact that there are getting to be more and more older people and fewer, quote, younger people, under 60 or under 65. More and more people of leisure, more and more people who are still in, less and less people who are still in the working era of their lives. More and more of us, and not hopefully, but possibly fewer children for the next few years. Can anybody think of any implications for us in this? And does that raise any questions for you? Okay, they're facing some problems. What about us? Does that raise any problems for us?
It certainly could, because it's possible that Social Security would be cut.
Okay, that's one possibility, that Social Security will be cut. Well, is that going to hurt, do you think?
There's also a lot of young people.
Pardon?
There's also a lot of young people.
Yeah.
Paying Social Security as it goes along. They never get that old, but they get Social Security.
Yeah. A lot of young people are...
accidentally or something like this, they don't get Social Security.
Okay. Now, why should I raise this with a group of people like you? I mean, do you have any responsibility for that? You've done your work, you're getting your Social Security, if you are. And I think most of us are. Does that raise any questions with you?
I think we do have a responsibility toward the younger ones. And as far as I'm concerned, I feel that this, what Reagan has tried to do, that's saying anything over $25,000 should be taxable. Mm-hmm. Because that way we are being considerate of the others. $25,000. Elderly person can get along that. I mean, it's still protecting those in the lower areas.
Yeah.
But I think it's a Christian responsibility that we have.
Okay, she's saying that older people do have some responsibility for addressing this question for, you know, I suppose a variety of reasons. Very good.
I think it opens up volunteer work for us, like Meals on Wheels. We do that for the older people. And it opens up a lot of volunteer work for us that are still old but able to be on our 2 feet and running around and doing things.
The implication of what you're saying, I think, is twofold. One is you're saying that it opens up opportunities for us to do something for people, but also I know of a number, I don't know whether this is what you meant, but I know of a number of churches, for example, in the cities, where they are furnishing free lunches at the church for older people who are under the poverty level, and are doing it not with government money, but with their own money. The churches are furnishing these lunches free, so that is a group of older people who are taking responsibility for helping people who are older people who are under the poverty level and not calling on the government necessarily to come in and do it.
Well, it isn't only the older people. We have a loaves and fishes program, and well, our church has any month that has 5 Wednesdays, we feed about 450 people, children. Watch those little children eat. They're just like they've never eaten in a long time. It's really rewarding.
Who pays?
Mostly old people that are doing the work.
Yeah. Who pays for that?
We have contributions. Church. If they don't want to work, they volunteer.
Okay.
The church pays for their own food that they.
Very good. Yeah. All right, that's an example, I think, of ways in which those of us who are the recipients I shouldn't say the largesse of the government, who are the recipients of Social Security, let us say, to participate in helping to deal with the problem. In other words, she's saying that, like you said, that we do have a responsibility. Even though we have reached retirement age and, quote, deserve to be supported, you know, we do have some responsibility for that.
But we have been blessed at this time, so we may be a blessing to others.
Okay. All right. Did you hear that? We've been blessed, she says, so that we may be a blessing to others. Now, you have to remember, of course, that not everybody who's 65 and over has been blessed, even if they're on Social Security. The statistics show that there are several millions of older people who are on Social Security but are living under the poverty level. This is a stark fact, contrary to what Reagan says.
But for those of us who have been blessed,
Blessed. Okay, very good. I got to thinking yesterday as I dealt with you people. Many of you were there yesterday. I got to thinking about the composition of this group. I think all of us have to recognize that most of us who come to Holden are kind of a unique people. We're not typical of our American society. For instance, I don't see any people of color here. There just aren't any. And unless I have missed someone. I don't know your financial status, but you were able to pay your transportation and your fee here, even if it's a reduced fee, and you're sleeping on the way out here if you drove, and so on and so on. It comes to, you know, a fair amount of money. So that those of us who come to Holden, and I have to pay my own way too. As a faculty person, I'm not paid either, so you know, we're all here on that same boat. But we have to recognize, and I'm not saying this in a derogatory way at all, but we have to realize that those of us who are here are not quite typical of the American scene as far as older people are, well, as far as anybody's concerned. For instance, a great many of the color, people of color in this country are below the poverty line. Even when they get to be on Social Security, probably because they haven't earned enough over their lifetime to have got, if they get Social Security, not very much, pretty low payment, minimum. Many of them, because of poor lifestyle, poor environment, lack of training and so on, lack of good education and so on, can't take advantage of many of the things that are available, the resources. They don't know how to take advantage. This is not true of just people of color, but it's true also of many non-colored people, white people, like most of us are. There, if you go to the big cities, and I'm sure in some of the smaller communities, there are always a segment of the population that are below. This is nothing new. When I came to Ames, Iowa, Ames is a lovely university city, one of the loveliest cities I've seen any place. And I came there in 1948 from Superior, Wisconsin, which was one of the crummiest, worst, dirtiest cities in the country. Corrupt, sailors, 300 sailors in port from this Great Lakes every day, and corruption and prostitution and everything was just rampant, poverty. Well, I became pastor in Ames, like moving into heaven. I drove around Ames the first week and kind of got acquainted with it, and then I went to the women's group. It was called LWF at that time, Lutheran Women's Federation. WMF, Women's Missionary Federation. Anyway, One of the older women came up and said, "Oh, isn't Ames a wonderful town?" And I said, "Yes, it is. It's just a great looking place." And she said, "It's, oh, the people are just so wonderful here." And I said, "Yes, they certainly are." And she said, "And we don't have any poor people in Ames." And I said, "No poor people? No, none." And I said, "Well, I was driving around town this week, and I went down that street on the east side of town there, and boy, there were a lot of rundown houses and kids running around in dirty clothes and men sitting around that didn't look like, you know, much." And she said, "Oh, that's outside the city limits."
That's called East Hollywood.
Pardon?
That's called East Hollywood.
Yeah, you know Ames, right. Her sister and her husband, who is quite ill now, by the way, were very good friends, or are good friends of ours, and so they lived in Ames. But anyway, there is a segment of those people out there, you know. There are that, what did you call it?
East Hollywood.
East Hollywood. There are East Hollywoods in small communities and in big cities all over the United States. And in them live a great many older people. A lot of older people. And in the ghettos of the big cities, in the inner cities, there are just thousands and thousands of impoverished old people. Okay.
I think that a lot of old people think Social Security was set up for enough to support you when you get old, which it is not. And they should still look, when they're young, think of saving a little money to help as a supplement. Social Security was meant for a supplement, not to live off of it.
Yeah, it's been interesting to trace the history of Social Security, because at the beginning, that was the concept, that Social Security was one step in providing for your old age. It has gradually assumed a much larger, and then one of the bigger things that has happened along that line, what is that? Medicare. You see, that came in, and Medicaid came in, and that just, you know, the spectrum just went completely like this. And you and I are the beneficiaries of that spreading umbrella that now hangs over old people, that has made it a different concept from what you're talking about. And then we tend to grab, I just became a member of AARP, American Association of Retired Persons. We just joined in just the last few months. So I got in the AARP paper, and I'm interested in it because it seems to me that the AARP is constantly pushing for more and more benefits for older people. And I haven't yet, we haven't been in it long enough to know, but I haven't yet gotten the feeling that AARP is really looking at this whole spectrum of things and how we older people not only can ask and keep pushing for more benefits, but how do we take responsibility for not only what's happening to us, but for what's going to happen to the next generation? I'd like to withhold judgment on AARP on that, but it seems to me that that's been kind of the emphasis, rather than on how we older people can meaningfully begin to deal with some of those questions and problems. Okay, who else wants to make a comment? Yeah.
How do you feel about when they make an increase in your Social Security, that it's a percentage? Now, those poor people that just get a small amount of Social Security don't get much of an increase.
Yeah.
But those that get so much get a big increase. Manage it so that everybody can get the same amount across the board, it seems to me that. I don't know.
Well, you're dealing with a very tough question now, because you see, you're beginning to touch on the whole American point of view. I mean, our whole history in the United States is based on the idea that you get what you work for. You get what you deserve. You work hard and you make it. If you don't work hard, or if you circumstances make it impossible, tough, that's too bad. You know, that's really the kind of system we've had, and it rewards those who can get ahead, and it really penalizes those who can't get ahead or won't get ahead. And of course, that's another big argument, you know. Are poor people there because they are lazy or don't want to work or something, or are circumstances making them? But, okay, you're raising the question now of the distribution of the wealth, you see. How do we equalize that and say a poor person gets a 20% increase while a wealthy person gets a 5% increase? So you're taking it away from the wealthy and giving it to the poor. Well, what's that? Socialism. As soon as you say that, the old socialism, you know, comes up. And you remember President Nixon, of all people. President Nixon had one great idea. I'm sure it wasn't just his idea, but it came out of his administration. He wanted to put a floor under the income of every person in the United States, that we would never allow anybody to go below a certain minimum income, which was what we now call the poverty level. In other words, nobody would fall below the poverty level, and we would supplement that. And boy, Nixon really got skinned on that one, because there were so many people who said, you're talking socialism. Can you imagine Nixon being accused of being a socialist? Not really. But nonetheless, there is a problem with that. And maybe there, again, is one of the responsibilities that we older people have, is to really address those questions seriously. You know, can we anymore live out the American dream? You know, that everybody can make it. I have some doubts personally. I don't think that works anymore. I've been a social worker, and I've dealt with varieties of social problems all my life. And I've seen too many millions and millions of people who are caught in the American system and are never going to get out of it. They're trapped there. Many blacks, many Indians, many poor whites, who, because of the system that has kept them alive but not given them any advantages, of a system that has excluded them from participation in the meaningful life of America, a system that hasn't allowed them to be well-educated or educated for jobs, they're doomed to stay there forever, and they're going to just stay on welfare. It's a vicious cycle. They can be, yes. But you see, there's a whole, if you go to Chicago and the Cabrini Green area, or, you know, Harlem in New York and so on, or in Minneapolis on Washington, not Washington, but Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, where the Indians are, sure, the schools are there, but they aren't ready. They aren't prepared to deal with that.
Well, the black people are. They're not. Stupid.
No. I'm not saying that they're not, that they're stupid.
Well, where I worked, they had to hire so many minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And some, most of them were black.
Mm-hmm.
Young.
Sure.
Well, so-and-so helped take stuff to the farm and everything. Father said, well, so-and-so's supposed to, where is he? Out in the lawn sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's exactly what I'm talking about. They're not prepared to take a responsible job. You see, many of these people who have grown up in the welfare system have grown up with a whole culture that says you don't work, you get supported, and it's not going to do any good to say, get that lazy lout out of here, because... I know it. I don't have any good answer to your question.
No, I just, people seem to... There's no reason why the young black people should be any different than us.
Oh, yes, there are.
There's too much emphasis.
There are hundreds of reasons. Because, listen, black people have come only since Martin Luther King in our generation to a place where they could take their place in society. Prior to the civil rights upset that you and I are so aware of in the 60s, black people were held in, most black people, not all of them, but almost all, were held locked in to a system that did not allow them to participate. Now, are you expecting that in 20 years, that whole thing is going to change? You know, they're going to all of a sudden become people who know how to participate, who know how to take advantage of the system, who know how to take advantage of education. But those are the, you know, yeah, okay. Right. It does. It does. Now, I'm not defending welfare, certainly, and I'm not pleading, you know, that we'd be bleeding hearts for the poor. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is, and this is what I tried to start out with. All I'm saying is that you and I, as older people, who are retired, most of us, and recipients of Social Security, pensions, etc., at least we can function in society fairly well. The question is, do we have any responsibility to deal with that? That's the question I'm raising. I'm not arguing for welfare against or for blacks or against blacks. I don't really want to get into that. What I really want to keep at is, how do we exercise responsibility? How do we help those people? In other words. Okay, great. But there's a whole, what I'm saying to you is there's a whole layer of people out there that do need that kind of help.
I had some experience with the Hispanics down in Homestead, Florida.
Homestead, Florida.
Yeah.
Hispanics in Homestead, Florida, she's
that
talking.
Are the migrant workers living in these labor camps.
Yeah.
The adults have to go to work out in the fields 6 o'clock in the morning already. Their children, sure, they can go to school, but you, how are you going to get somebody to wake those children up mm-hmm. to walk a mile or more up to get the bus when they're 6, 5, 6, 7 years old? They do that for a while, but if there isn't somebody to encourage them, pretty soon they're going to be discouraged. I mean, they don't have the... Our children wouldn't get up by themselves if mother and dad wasn't there to encourage them. Maybe see that they get breakfast, and those kids don't get meals.
Not only to get them up in the morning, but to also provide a meaningful situation for them throughout the day.
And they don't have clothes to wear, so they get to school, and they're ridiculed because they're not maybe washed and clean like we see that our children are. I mean, you can't say that those kids aren't.
Yeah, okay.
They have every black mark against them.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right, this is true. But I still come back to the question, how do you and I, as older people, who I presumably are still participants and citizens of our country, and should be at least, I think, concerned about what's happening to our country, how do we exercise responsibility in that kind of situation? Well, let me suggest a couple of things. Because there is a growing number of us, most of us who are here, there is a growing number of older people in the country, a certain kind of power is coming into our hands. What is that? What? Political power, right. Political power. Now that's dynamite. When you begin to get political power, you really have got dynamite in your hands. That is really something. And there's no question that in the next generation, you and I will, many of us will still be around, but as the next two or three administrations go by, in our government, state, local, national, whatever. The vote of older people is going to be more and more a factor. The legislators are going to be looking over their shoulder at us. The congressmen and senators are going to be looking over their shoulder at us. When the candidates go out to campaign in the next few campaigns, they're going to be looking at the audience to see how many gray hairs are out there. So older people are, in the next few generations, going to, whether we want it or not, assume a more important place in the political scene. Now, not all older people exercise that, which is too bad. A lot of older people drop out when they retire and don't vote anymore, which is I think, real sad. But what we're talking about, you about the welfare system and some of the other things, those are political issues, you see. The future of Social Security, or rather, let's put it, the future of those who are going to have to support Social Security, is part of the political process. What responsibility politically do we older people have toward the younger people who are supporting us at the present time? You and most of us didn't pay in enough to Social Security to warrant what we're getting out of it. Somebody else is paying for part of your and my Social Security even today, and that's going to increase as your sons and daughters and grandchildren begin to be in the producing area. I've got a granddaughter who's now 2 or 3 years away from becoming a wage earner, and she's going to begin to support me. But all I'm trying to say is that in the face of all of these things, I think we older people need to begin to consider what kinds of responsibilities we have, not only to each other, but to the society in which we live.
And when you get more and more into your art, you'll notice that we should be writing to our congressmen. And this was the 50th anniversary of the beginning of Social Security. And Roosevelt, the governor, I don't know which one, John. And he sent us all his things to send all back to our. Mm-hmm.
I don't either.
I still don't know whether he succeeded or not, but he had tons and tons of mail that he just dumped in the Oval Office.
Yeah. Okay.
Isn't this maybe going to even complicate matters?
What?
With the vote being carried by the older people.
Oh, of course it'll complicate things. Yes. But life isn't very simple anyway, And I don't know of any way American life can be simple, made more simple. I'm not sure that it would be less complicated if you and I just withdrew and said, well, that's up to the younger people. I'm not sure that would simplify it much.
I don't think we should feel sorry for them having to pay for us. When Social Security started, we got $105 a month, and where they make $100 a day on the same type of labor today, I don't think we should have to feel bad that they're paying for this now.
Oh, I don't feel bad about it.
It's not, they're making it, they're making the same percentage. Where this lady spoke of percentages, figures lie on liar's figures, so you can turn it either way you want.
I don't feel bad about it. What I feel badly, not feel badly, what I consider to be a problem is that what I said in the beginning, there are more and more of us and less of them, so that their burden increases, because they have proportionately. When Social Security started, we were all paying in, but the number paying in is growing proportionately less, not numerically less, but proportionately less, while the number taking out is growing larger and larger, So it's going to create a problem. No matter how you feel about that, it's going to create a problem.
The percentage has changed. I think the older people just start to work a little longer. When I got close
Yeah.
Do you know what that Social Security
office? Well, I think there's a lot of different attitudes toward older people working longer. Some people would like that, others wouldn't, because they feel that we should get out of the way and make room for younger people to move into the job market. And then there are others, like you, who say we should work longer and not be a burden on society and so on and so on. So that debate is really, really going on. Nobody solved that one, except that now there has been a nod toward longer working, and that is that you cannot fire people arbitrarily at 65 just because they got to be 65, which is, you know, allows people to work longer. Yeah, I was a high school student in 1930 to 1933. Well, I was born in 15. So, you too? Okay. And you know, sure, I know that we lived through the Depression, and it was very rough. No question about that. There are a lot of mitigating factors on that. Well, that, yeah, here's, you say it aloud.
Everybody was poor.
Okay, this was a condition of society, and somehow we were able to support each other and make do and make even some happiness. Yeah, I don't remember that as an unhappy time. I remember it as a tough time, because I remember my father, who was a pastor, got a very low salary, but they did have a habit at that time of giving the pastor an offering at Christmas time. They'd put it up on the altar. And I remember my dad, we'd come home after the Christmas service, and my dad would dump out this sack of money, and us kids got to count the money. And the next morning, my dad went down and paid up his grocery bills and his other bills for the last 3 or 4 months, you know. So I can, but it wasn't an unhappy time, you know, but it was a hard time. But you can't say the way it was then is the way it is now. We're living in a different society now. Different expectations. Young people have grown up under different, they view life differently. And that may not be all bad. Values are different. You know, we talked about values yesterday. How difficult it is for us who are older to transmit our values to the values of today. It just can't be done. You know, you can talk about how happy you were when you were poor, and the young people today would, you know, they can't even relate to that.
Well, it seems to me wastefulness is the way of life now. Everything, water, paper, everything. For a while, there was this stress on the ecology, saving. But that, it didn't linger with the young. Everyone wants that we're so idealistic and we're going to carry this through, but it faded fast.
Do you waste anything?
I try not to, and my children say, well, Mother, we were born in the Depression. We didn't live in the Depression.
I sometimes deplore that sort of thing, too, and then I look at my wastebasket on Monday mornings when I go out and start dumping it in the garbage can, and I look at that mountain of garbage that we got during the week, and I think, man alive, what's going on here? And I find that here I am of my generation that grew up in the Depression, and here I am, one of the wasteful people of this generation. Time has moved on.
I got kind of a chuckle out of the, the instructions in our room. Use your bath towel more than once. You know, what was it they said? Don't ask for a change of bath towel sooner than 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that isn't all so dumb, because after all, you wipe a clean body. You know? Bath towel can dry, you know, and this is just a phase that is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
When you talk about
okay.
saving
yeah.
water.
Well, when I grew up, we didn't buy on time.
Well, is that bad, though?
I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was good now, but I mean, is it bad now to buy on time?
It's put us in a terrible position.
Yeah, but think of all the good things you can get by buying on time.
I like to pay for them before I go.
I didn't hear you.
I see a lot of farmers that would buy their groceries on time.
Yeah. What would most farmers do now if they couldn't buy their machinery on time? We wouldn't have any wheat, you know. We wouldn't have anything growing. But, of course, that created a problem because a lot of them are in trouble now. We know that.
You know, that's people taking bankruptcy is right.
Do what?
I don't think that people taking bankruptcy is right.
Well, no, it isn't right, but it's the only alternative many people have, and it's one of those difficult things. Well, time is going along, and I think it might help us to get... Well, you wanted to say something before.
I think inflation has made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was in a nursing home, $14 a month. Now it's $2,000
mm-hmm.
a month.
Yeah.
People can't afford to be in a nursing home.
Yeah, yeah. This is my wife's mother lived to be 96, and she was 14 years in a nursing home, and she went through the same thing. You know, a few dollars a month to begin with, and then it just it's a tough thing to deal with. What all of us are saying here, I think, as I hear it, is, and you're articulating it much better than I was able to with my notes. That's why I quit talking quite a while ago, because I think you've got something to say here. What we're saying here is that the system in this country, the culture that is taking place, the economics and so on, are very complicated. And yet you and I are in an era when our numbers are growing, our responsibility is becoming greater, and one of the things we need to think about, and that's all I hope to do in this session, was to stimulate thinking. Not because it's very complex, and I don't think we can come up with neat solutions, but the fact that you and I have political power is a thing that all of us older people need to consider seriously. And our organizations, our community operations, which are very important. Look at all the things we talked about yesterday that are based in the community, in the small town, and in the community in the city. Those become entities through which we can begin to affect what's happening in society, if we're willing to take the time and energy to do that. Now, I presume that most of us are Christian people here. It seems to me that falls within the purview of the whole Christian ethic, which is concern for your neighbor. Not concern just for yourself, but for your neighbor. And one of the things that I think happens to us, I find it happening to me, is that the older I get, the more I get from my regular work and into retirement, the more I get turned in on myself and my own interests and my own concerns. When I want to travel and what I like to eat and you know, how I want to use my leisure time and so on. And less do I keep thinking about what's happening in my society. But as I think the Lord doesn't make provision for retirement. Retirement provisions are made by companies and by the federal government in Social Security and pension systems and so on. God never said anything about retirement that I can remember. So we aren't retired from our Christian situation. We are not retired from the call that the Lord has given us to be involved with the world. That, I don't think anybody has a right to, who is a Christian, to say that you know, now I can rest from doing the things that Christian people do. So I feel that as we grow in numbers and power and concern, that this is something we need to take into deep consideration. Okay, it's almost time to quit. Does anyone have a final thought that they'd like to lay on us? Not very long, anyway.
But I was willing to pay, say, $500 or $600 a month towards, as part of it. I was not allowed to.
No,
no. I can't bother them. So they're taking care of all of it.
Yeah, my wife ran into the same situation. Her mother, as I said, got to be 96 and finally ran out of money. And the family didn't have enough to pay. So we went the same thing. We tried to deal with the administration and say, we'll take part of it. No, they're either on public assistance or not. I don't think we should be squeamish about being on public assistance. I think in the inflationary kind of situation that we are now, unless you have substantial means, it is practically impossible over the long run, if somebody lives to be 90 to 100, unless you have tremendous means and you do need specialized care. I don't see any reason why anybody should not be willing to accept public assistance under those circumstances. I don't feel a bad conscience about that. That's part of the kind of society in which we live, and I think it has to be that way. But we have to watch it, that we don't develop that public assistance mentality, you see. Yeah.
Well, I think, thinking back to my own parents, I'm sure that they worked, I would say, over 30 years, and they worked hard, and they had nothing to show for it except honest labor until the last 10 to 15 years they lived. Yeah. And we were real glad that by that time, things had improved
farm-wise,
sure. So
that, yeah. Okay. Well, okay, I hope this has stimulated some thinking about our responsibilities as Christians and as citizens who are older in this country.